Before we start our episode today, I want to talk a little bit about a hard topic, fertility. If you are one of the many women struggling to become pregnant again, just know that we're thinking of you and sending you the most positive thoughts. For mamas trying to conceive or struggling with fertility, I encourage you to check out Needed. When the two founders of Needed began their fertility journey, they were shocked to see the lack of nutrition advice provided. Along with creating an amazing line of prenatal vitamins, omega-3s, and other essentials, they offer egg quality support for women and sperm plus for men. These are things that are not often talked about. I wanted to share more about both of those products. Needed's egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving egg quality can support fertility outcomes. It's never too early or too late to start focusing on egg quality, but for optimal results, they recommend taking egg support at least 3 months before trying to conceive or freezing the eggs. For Needed Sperm Support Plus, it combines targeted and clinically studied ingredients, pre and probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for the whole body approach to male fertility. Expertly formulated for men who are thinking of trying to conceive and for men's vitality at stages of all life. If you are pregnant or trying to conceive, or even in your postpartum stages, consider switching to Needed to get 20% off your order by using code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC20 at checkout. Women of Strength, we have another amazing VBAC story with you for you today. And this VBAC story follows a C-section that was unplanned, which, let's be honest, most of ours are, and that it kind of had a lot of intervention. So we have our friend, oh my gosh, I can't speak today, Adriana, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
So excited to be here.
Oh my gosh. I am so excited for you to be here. And tell me, okay, so you're currently in Mexico, but where were you when you had your VBAC?
I'm in New Mexico, so the U.S.
Oh, you're in New Mexico. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. In New Mexico and the U.S. And I had both my unplanned cesarean and VBAC here in New Mexico.
Oh, you did? Okay. It's a good to know. So very, very good to know. You guys, she is a scientist and a professor. She spent many years researching microbes, which is really cool. And so do you say fungi? Is that how you say it?
You can say fungi, fungi, fungi. People use all different ways. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're all correct. Yeah.
It's like fungus, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And bacteria, which I have so much interest in, weirdly enough, because it's in our gut. I have a really weird interest in gut health right now. anyways, so, and how they're impacting the global climate. And something that's kind of cool about her science journey is it really kind of seems like it was spun after VBAC, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've had an interest in science since forever, but I guess I had no idea how much science was behind VBAC, and just getting into this VBAC project that I had for a while, I feel like it really ended up helping me to grow as a scientist, which was really cool.
So cool. And we're going to maybe talk a little bit more about the science of VBAC here in the end. So make sure to stick with us. I do have a review of the week before she starts sharing her story. This is from E. Oliver 14. And it says, love this podcast. It says, I'm not one to usually listen to podcasts, but ever since I came across this one, I haven't been able to stop listening. I'm preparing for my VBA 2C, so VBAC after two cesareans. And these stories have been so amazing and helpful. E. Oliver 14, I hope all went well if you've had a baby since then, or if you're still preparing, I hope that this podcast is still inspiring you. And if, just like E. Oliver 14, if this podcast is inspiring you and helping you and building you up, please leave us a review. We love them so much. And I really, truly, truly, truly believe that so do, honestly, all the listeners. I think a lot of listeners love these reviews. So it's so fun. So you can leave that at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or really wherever you leave your podcasts, or even if you want to Google the VBAC link, you can review us there.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, Adriana, let's get going into this story. So, unplanned C-section.
Yes. So I want to give like a very brief kind of like background of, I guess, my life just to get into like the mindset that I was when I had the unplanned cesarean. So my husband and I have been together for a really long time. We're gonna celebrate our 20th anniversary this year. We met our first year of college and then we've been together ever since, but we only had our first child in 2021. And that is because we prioritized our careers for a really long time. We're both scientists, we're both professors. So we did our bachelor's together, then we did our master's and then our PhDs together. And then we did long distance for a while because we were doing postdoctoral research, which is a thing. And then in 2020, we both landed a job in New Mexico State University, where we are right now. So in August of 2020, we moved across the country from New Hampshire and from New York City to New Mexico. And we sort of like started, our new life in, a new city during the pandemic with a new and like very demanding job. And in April of 2021, which was just like a few months after we moved to, we live in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And when we moved here, kind of like the biggest surprise of our life happened, which was that I was pregnant. And it was a surprise pregnancy. And then the pregnancy was just like overall kind of like uneventful in the sense that, I just didn't have like any sort of kind of like discomfort or anything. I was just kind of like tired, and that's pretty much it. But then when I was like around 16 weeks pregnant, I got a phone call kind of like out of nowhere. And I got the news, and this is kind of like the way that it was told to me. They were like, you have 50% chances of your child having a fragile X chromosome, which is a genetic disease. And I was like, what? Like, what is it? Like, what's that? Like, I had never heard about it. And I was like, 50% chances, that's pretty high. And I remember like I was in my office and Giovanni, my husband, was there when we got that phone call. And we were kind of like just like very confused. And then when we started to look into it, it's actually a pretty terrible genetic disease to have. So, all of a sudden, like our whole life kind of like, was sort of like
Flipped
shifted.
around.
Exactly. So we were like very concerned. Since the very beginning for my first pregnancy, there were a lot of interventions just because I was of advanced maternal age. I was 36 at the time. And you know that like after 35, you are of advanced maternal age. It doesn't matter if everything looks good, but you are like older than 35 and that's it. So then, they were like, oh, we recommend like this testing and this other testing and this other one and so on. And one of those testings was genetic testing, which I think we wanted to do either way, just like to be prepared in case of anything. So then we started to look into like, what is this genetic disease? And then once again, like it was pretty bad. So then immediately I was like 50% chances, like that's pretty terrible. And that's kind of like where I sort of like brought in like my scientist skills. I was like, wait a minute. So then I got in touch with like a genetic counselor, and I don't think this is just the way it is for everyone, but like the particular genetic counselor that I spoke with wasn't really helpful. Even though I told them like, I'm a scientist and I have like a pretty strong molecular biology background. Like I understand like DNA and genes very well. like, you know, I was looking for like very specific information, and they were just like not really, they were just not really helpful. So then I, like, both Giovanni and I spent so much time like digging into the scientific literature and kind of like finding, trying to find information about this disease. And that's how we sort of like came about some like newer testing that like really looks deep into the DNA sequence that they find in your baby. And then they're able to tell kind of like very precise, like, what are your chances of your child having this disease or not, just like based on the genetic sequence. So then we just spend a lot of time looking into that, finding that information, and then advocating, you know, for my baby to get this genetic testing done, because it was not something that like my insurance wanted to cover. But like, long story short, after a few couple months looking into that and, you know, making calls and so on, we found a way for that testing to be done. And then when we got the results back, actually from, well, 50% chances was like wrong to begin with. Like, the information I was giving was wrong. Yes.
That's some pretty wrong information to get.
Yes. And it got me thinking on like how many people are probably just like given this information with like the statistics like totally wrong. So then the 50% chances, when I looked into it, like went down to like 5% chances. And then when we did the additional testing, it went down to like 0.1 chances. So like, you know, like essentially like null, almost.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, that even though, you know, we were very grateful for that, it sort of like set this tone in like my pregnancy where I was just like so stressed the whole time. And I just didn't, you know, put any time in researching what did I, like, how do I have to prepare to give birth? You know, I was just like, kind of like in survival mode.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense, kind of like just grateful that, you know, I didn't have to worry about the genetic disease. So then I think at around week 35, they were like, you know, because of advanced maternal age, we recommend an induction at week 39. And I was like, okay, you know, this is, you know, they're recommending me this, let's just go ahead and do this. And then like somewhere, I'm a very tall person, and Giovanni's tall as well, so we make big babies, kind of, you know, quote unquote. And I knew the date of conception of kind of, around the date of conception of my baby, and I knew that based on that date of conception, I was going to be 40 weeks on December 31st. And then like somewhere around 30 weeks, they were like, no, because of what your baby's measuring, your due date is actually December 22nd. So then that means that we want
almost
to induce 10
days
you.
Earlier.
Exactly. And they were like, so that means we would like to induce you on December 15th. And kind of like, once again, I was like, fine, you know, yeah, sure. So then on December 15th, we went into an induction. It's a very long story, but kind of like, long story short, the induction lasted 3 days and like nothing happened. I was given Cervidil and Cytotec and like nothing happened. Like, I didn't dilate. I like nothing. My cervix didn't soften.
Your body was really not ready.
It was really not ready.
Yeah.
And then I was really desperate. You know, I was like, what's going on? Like, why are things not happening? And no one was giving me like any information, even though I was asking like, what's going on? And they were like, oh, just relax. And then I ended up asking a nurse. I was like, because the doctor came in and he was like, well, we've tried Cytotec and like Cervidil. This is not working. So the next thing to do is Pitocin. So he was like, is that what you want? And I was like, I don't know. Let me think about it. And then I asked a nurse, I was like, what do you think about like me getting Pitocin? And the nurse was like, no. She was like, no, they're setting you up for failure. Like, you haven't dilated at all. She was like, no, just say no. So then I kind of like, just desperate for like any advice, I ended up saying no, and I was discharged. And they were like, we're going to discharge you, but you have to come back. It was a Saturday when I was discharged, and they were like, you have to come back on Tuesday for like a second induction. And they were like, but you know, a lot of times, you know, after a failed induction, people go home and then they come back in labor a few days after. And I was like, okay, I hope that's me. And then I wasn't. So then On Tuesday, I went back. So this was December like 21st, I think, or something. So I went back for a second induction. And then when I went in, I was already kind of like soft on my cervix. So I sort of like felt like things were sort of like advancing really well. I was excited. And then it was kind of like almost a 3-day induction once again. So they started giving me like the same, they gave me Cytotec first and then like waited for a few hours. And then I had like the Foley bulb inserted. And it's kind of like a blur because there were just like so many interventions. Like people were like coming in and out of the room like the whole time. And I was kind of like still sort of like kind of like having like a hangover of the last induction, you know, because I like 3 days, I was so tired. I was like so hurt. They couldn't find like my veins. So then I had like multiple bruises in my arms. It was just like so many things. So I felt kind of like hangover, if that makes any sense. And I started like dilating with a Foley bulb. It came out and so on. So at the beginning, like things seemed to be like going sort of like,
better.
Well, yeah, better. And I was like, okay. And I think like when I don't even know how much I was dilated, but at some point, like the OBGYN came in and she was like, you know, I recommend we rupture your waters just so that things sort of like start going. And I was like, yeah, sure. Things seem to go, you know, they seem to be going well. So let's do it. And they ruptured my waters. And then that was pretty much it. Like, I don't really feel like things started like happening or anything. And I was getting like cervical checks, like very, very, very often, which was, I think that's sort of like messed up with my head to some level. And it sort of like hurt me, you know, like they're not the most comfortable things to like go through.
Especially early on in labor.
Like exactly.
When you're trying to get induced and you fully barely just came out, you probably got a posterior cervix pretty close still, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there was like some bleeding going on. It was like really terrible. So then a few hours after my membranes were like ruptured, I think maybe like the doctor could see that I was like not relaxed for like obvious reasons. And she like suggested to get an epidural. She was like, oh, you should like, I suggest you to get an epidural because I think that would help you like relax. And, you know, that can sort of like speed up things. And I was like, oh, okay. So then I ended up getting an epidural and then I got one and it only worked on like half of my body. So then I had to get like another one later on. And after like many, 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 many hours, like things were not happening. I did end up getting like contractions after the Pitocin. And, you know, like the contractions, I could feel them on half of my body. And then eventually I just couldn't feel them. I could just like feel the pressure. And that went on for like hours. I mean, I think I got like the Pitocin. It started at like, I don't know, like 8 p.m. maybe, or like 5 p.m. And then they were increasing the dosage. And then around like 6 a.m., I think they had gotten to like the highest dose that you can get. And I was not, I mean, they checked me and I was at 6 or like 5.5 or so on. So then the doctor was like, okay, so we're going to stop the Pitocin and sort of like let your body do things. And my body didn't do anything. Like the contractions completely stopped once the Pitocin was removed. And we waited for like an hour or two. And by this time, like my waters had been ruptured for like over 24 hours. So she was like, you know, like there's nothing else we can do. Like we've tried everything, like nothing is happening. I recommend having a C-section. Which, I mean, I think at that point, like, I really felt like I had no other option. I was like, this is what needs to happen. So, yeah, what I have to do. So, sure, let's go ahead and do it. And fortunately, it wasn't, like, an emergency C-section or anything. So I was able, like, we still waited for, like, 4 or 5 hours. Yeah, just, like, sitting there waiting for the, I guess, for, like, the team to get, like, their act together. And, you know, they took me to the OR and my baby was born around noon. And, you know, things were, everything went fine. I had like no complications. My baby had no complications. So that was pretty, it was pretty nice. But the recovery was like so, it was so tough. And it was just like something inside me just like didn't feel right. You know, I was like, what just happened? You know, sort of like, what just happened? Like, why did I end up having like a C-section? And I just remember like thinking about it like over and over and over, you know, at night when I was nursing and, you know, when I was like alone with my thoughts and so on, I was like, what happened? You know, like those sorts of things and sort of like why I, you know, when I asked questions, like, why did no one answer the questions? You know, they were just kind of like, I don't know, treating me as if I was like, I don't know, like a uneducated person. They just didn't want to engage. And I think that's wrong just in general to everyone. Just like the way that you're dismissed when you ask questions is just pretty terrible. Like they're on a schedule and they really have like no time or interest, in my opinion, in engaging. So then, you know, I started to like think about it a little bit more. And then in my mind, I was like, well, I guess if I have another child, like I can always do things differently. And that was sort of like the mindset that I was in for a few months. And when I went to my 6-month follow-up appointment to sort of like make sure everything was okay, I asked the doctor, I was like, so if I have another child, like I would like to have this child vaginally. And I was like, so I would want to know, like, why did I end up having like a C-section? Like, what happened? I know it was failure to progress, according to your notes, but like, what does that mean, you know? And she was like, you know, she like looked at my chart for like 10 seconds. And she told me, you cannot deliver vaginally because your pelvis is too small. And I was like, what? It was like, no, like that cannot be. And I know that like your body doesn't, like you can have your pelvis one way and it doesn't really mean anything based on your body. But like, I have like a pear-shaped body. So I was like, no, I don't think my pelvis is too small. So then I asked her, I was like, so how do you know that my pelvis is really small? And then she was like, because you failed to progress. And I was like, you know, she just like didn't, like she did not want to engage. She did not want to. So I just left that room and I was livid. I was just like so angry that she did not want to engage. She did not have a conversation. And I was like, I didn't even know if I was going to have another child at that point. But I was like, if I ever get pregnant again, I'm just not going to come here, period. And I just kept thinking about it over and over and over. And I was like, I just need to reach out to someone that can help me understand this a little bit better. So I reached out to a local doula and asked for information about like VBAC, just in general, which I didn't know it was called VBAC at the time. You know, I was just like, you know, this happened to me. Like if this were to happen again, like, can I deliver vaginally? And she invited me to a VBAC course. And the course was like super awesome. They shared a ton of like statistics on inductions, VBACs, and so on. And she also suggested doing a birth story processing, which was pretty awesome too. So then 18 months later, I got pregnant with my second child. And I sort of like knew exactly what I wanted, which was not what I had had before. So I knew that I wanted a VBAC ideally, and that I wanted as few interventions as possible. And I wanted a provider that would engage with me. And I wanted a provider that would follow like evidence-based facts. And of course, a provider that was like VBAC supportive. And I looked for all of those things around my town. We have two hospitals, like it's not a huge city. And I asked around, and I basically, the information that I got is that they're like VBAC tolerant, but because I was of advanced maternal age, probably none of them would be sort of like comfortable having me as a patient. So then I ended up finding a midwife practice. And that's sort of like what I ended up choosing, because that was, they were all that I wanted. So they were amazing. And I did end up having like the most wonderful experience throughout my pregnancy with them. So, you know, throughout my pregnancy, like I did a lot of research on my options. I educated myself on physiological birth. And I also took classes on a home birth. And I did a bunch of other things. Like I did fear release, hypnosis. I did the birth story processing, which was, I think, one of the most helpful things, you know, that I could do throughout my pregnancy. I didn't really think that I had like trauma related to my past pregnancy or fear of any sort. But then through the birth story processing, I ended up finding out that I did have like some birth trauma, and I had a lot of fear for this new pregnancy associated to my experience with my last pregnancy. And then I did the daily essentials of like spinning babies every day, like every day. I didn't skip like any day, just in case that like position was an issue last time. I ended up getting like my documents for my last pregnancy, like
your
my records. I ended up getting them actually 1 week before my VBAC, because I felt like, you know, it was always like something that I was like, oh, I need to go and like get this done. But then I sort of like kept forgetting. And then like before my VBAC, I was like, I need to get that report and I need to read it so that I can have like some closure. And I ended up like finding out some like really interesting things. Like this is kind of like a parenthesis. They said that my uterus was boggy when, you know, when they're doing like your C-section and they said that they had to like take out the uterus and like massage it because it was boggy. And I was like, what is that? So then I looked into that a little bit more, and I ended up finding out that my uterus was like so tired of the Pitocin contractions, exactly, that it was just like not working. So that sort of like gave me some closure, if that makes sense. I was like, oh, it's not because my body was not working. It was just like overtired.
We're going to take a quick break to continue talking about fertility. I know many of our beautiful women of strength listening join us right after their cesarean birth. And when you're in your postpartum stages, many of your nutrition needs actually increase. And if you're thinking about having another baby, I invite you to take a moment to educate yourself on the support that our favorite prenatal supplement Needed offers for both fertility and postpartum. When the two founders of Needed began their fertility journey, they were shocked to see the lack of nutrition advice provided. Along with creating an amazing line of prenatal vitamins, omega-3s, and other essentials, they offer eggs quality support for women and sperm support for men. Again, this is not something we often talk about. Male fertility impacts conception and a healthy pregnancy, and it is in decline due to stress, toxins, aging, and other lifestyle factors. Hormone and gut health of your partner directly influences sperm quantity and quality, and ultimately the DNA passed from sperm to baby. I love that Needed not only thinks about the female fertility, but also about the male fertility. Needed does an amazing job thinking about and supporting us women through the fertility journey. They offer prenatals, omega-3s, antioxidant, rich in egg quality support supplements, and it is formulated by prenatal health practitioners to help you and your eggs thrive. You are born with all of your egg cells, or oocytes. And the oocyte takes 3 to 4 months to mature before ovulation. Needed egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving egg quality can support fertility outcomes, and it's never too early or too late to focus on egg quality. So we hope you can check out thisisneeded.com and enjoy 20% off with code VBAC20. Again, that is VBAC20 at thisisneeded.com. Back to today's show.
So anyways, and I listened through the VBAC podcast, VBAC Link podcast, every day. Also, I did like daily walks, and you know, you were like my companion throughout those walks, and just like listening to all of the different stories, it sort of like gave me an idea that, you know, birth can go in many different directions. And it sort of like helped me understand that you really have like very little control over, you know, over your birth experience. So you can prepare all you want, but then at some point you have to like let go because you can't really sort of like control the situation, which, you know, as a scientist is very frustrating because we always are in control of our experiments. But in a way, like we have never, like we can never control the outcome of the experiment. So in a way, you know, I was like, okay, this is just like one more experiment.
Yeah.
Yes. I did have spotting on week 18 of my pregnancy, and I was diagnosed with marginal placenta previa and possible accreta. So for a few weeks, I was like, well, you know, maybe this is just like not meant to be, and that is okay. But then it ended up resolving by week 28. So I was sort of like cleared for BVAC. Throughout the pregnancy, like I kept my plans like secret from almost everyone, including my parents and my in-laws. And I told Giovanni, like, you are forbidden to talk about this with like anyone. And he was, and you know, like, as you start getting closer to your, like, to your due date, like people start asking questions, which to me is like, why do they want to know such specific information? Like, where are you giving birth? Like, I never ask that, you know, but like some people like really want to get all the details. So I just told him like, just lie and just like tell them that it's going to be at a hospital and, you know, just say whatever you want. Like, I don't care. I just don't want people like asking questions and just like getting anxious over my, you know, birthing plans. Decisions. Exactly. Like, I don't want to give explanations to anyone. I don't have the energy to educate anyone at the moment. Like, I know that I am making the right decision for me, and that's pretty much it. So that was like really difficult, I guess, sort of like keeping that information from, you know, from some like friends. But, you know, towards as my due date got closer, of course, like we shared the information with my parents, just our families in general, our in-laws. And I did share my plans with a few very, very close friends of mine. And most of them were like supportive. Some of them, I guess, like I had to deal with like some anxiety on their side. My doula helped me a lot with that, you know, because I was getting sort of like almost angry that they were anxious. But, you know, my doula was like, well, you know, you have to remember that, you know, they love you and they love your baby and, you know, they're scared for you and for your baby. So like try to understand them. So that's sort of like, yeah, it sort of like gave me that perspective, like, yeah, well, I guess, yeah, if I didn't know, if I wasn't educated enough on like, you know, facts, I would probably be like anxious too. So especially like around week 35, their anxiety sort of like passed on to me. And I started to have like a lot of doubts about my decision. You know, I was like, is this really the right decision? Like, is this really what I want? By then, you know, I was so sort of like soaked on data and stats because I just put so much time into researching all of that, that that's sort of like how I calmed myself down. You know, I was like, you know, the data, you know, the stats, you know, the chances of like things going wrong. Of course, there's always a chance of like things going wrong, but like the chances are so low that it's almost like impossible for this to happen. And if something were to happen, you know, okay, well, you were one of those improbable chances, but you know, it was kind of like a risk that I was willing to take just based on like the data and the statistics. And once again, like that really helped me to sort of like deal with my anxiety. And if I would have had energy at the time, I would have been more than happy to share all those, you know, data and stats with friends and family. This is also how my husband ended up, you know, being sort of like convinced that I wanted a VBAC and that I wanted a home birth as well. I remember this one day, I think there was like some sort of like miscommunication between him and I at the beginning. Like first he wasn't like super happy that I was going with like a midwifery practice, but then I was like, you know, they're like trained professionals and, you know, it's not like called the midwife that, you know, she shows up with like, you know, like a tissue. I was like, no, like these people, like, You know, they come with equipment, you know, it's,
yeah,
that's how it is. So that sort of like calmed him down. But I think he thought I was going to give birth at hospital. So then one day I was watching, mm-hmm. like, I don't know if you heard of like this terrible thing that happened with an uncertified midwife where the baby was like footling bridge. And yeah, it was a really terrible story. So I was watching something on YouTube, and then that came up, and Giovanni was like, I don't understand these crazy people that want to give birth at home. I was like, hello, like, I am planning to give birth at home. And he was like, what? So I told him, like, yes, Giovanni, like, I am planning to give birth at home. Like, this has been the plan the whole time. And he was like, no, I thought it was going to be at a hospital. And I was like, no, it's going to be at home. So he got like really, really nervous for a while. So like, once again, like, I shared statistics and like data with him.
Right.
And the midwives also, they were like, you know, bring him in, have him, you know, bring all the questions that he wants and we'll answer them. Like, everything, we're here to help.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, after a couple of weeks, after having that conversation and after I shared a lot of resources with him, I told him, I was like, so do you want to come with me to the midwife's appointment so that you can ask any questions you want? And he was like, no, it's okay. And I was like, oh, so you're cool with me having a home birth? And he was like, yeah, if that's what you want, like, I respect that. I respect your choices. I respect you. Yeah, I trust you as an individual and the choices that you make. So that's totally fine. So kind of like giving him resources so that he could see like the data, I feel like really, like really, really helped him. And then, you know, with like some of my family members, like my brother, for example, he was like, why do you want to do this? You know, like, why don't you just, you know, why? Like, why do you want to do this that it's not the norm? And I was like, well, because, and I sort of like explained to him my rationale and he was like, okay. And I had some other conversations, like, you know, I have a family member and she's a physician. And she was also like, why would you want to do this? You know, like, cesareans are so easy, especially if they're scheduled. You just go in, you don't suffer, and then you just come out with a baby. And I was like, have you had a cesarean? And of course she has. And I was like, it's not really, like, it's really not that easy. Like, the recovery is really, really, really tough. And there can be some, like, very serious complications. If it's needed, then that's wonderful. But I know that I did not need one for my mm-hmm. first pregnancy, and I know that I do not need one right now. So then at 39 weeks, I started to feel like very anxious because nothing was happening. And I was very worried that I was not gonna go into labor on my own because I never went into labor last time, mm-hmm. like, even though I know I was
two
early.
Inductions. Yeah.
Yes. But I was still kind of like worried that, you know, what if I never go into labor on my own? I'm going to start to get very nervous if I have to go like past 42 weeks. And then on 39 plus 5, I had prodromal labor at night. So I kind of like felt excited to experience sort of like real contractions, I guess, for the first time. And I was also very worried that I was not going to be able to go unmedicated because the prodromal labor was quite intense. And I got thinking, you know, I was thinking about like all these people who've shared their stories that they just had prodromal labor for like weeks. I was like, oh my gosh, that's horrible. I reached out to my doula and I was like, okay, I had prodromal labor last night. I'm very worried about not being able to like handle the unmedicated birth that I want to do. And she suggested we do a welcome baby hypnosis session and to focus on relaxation. So I guess, like, once again, as a scientist, like, I never thought that I would be into hypnosis. And it just ended up being like this wonderful resource that like helped me a lot during my pregnancy and during labor. Yeah. And on my due date exactly, so I woke up and noticed that I had lost what looked like pieces of my mucus plug. And then within a few hours, I started having like some mild contractions around kind of like 1 p.m. And then the contractions continue to get more intense throughout the afternoon and the evening. And at midnight, my contractions were super intense, but they were not consistent. I couldn't get any sleep because of the intensity of the contractions. but I did try to like rest as much as possible. And around 4 p.m., like my doula checked in and she was like, what's going on? And I was like, well, I've been having these contractions like on and off. And the contractions, like I felt them where you feel like period cramps and they like lower abdomen. They were so intense on that area. But just according to what other people have said, they were like, no, you feel them like on your whole belly. And I was like, well, these are just weird. I don't know, like, are these real contractions or not? And just because they were not consistent, like I would get them like every 3 minutes, every 5 minutes, every 7 minutes. Sometimes they would last a minute, but sometimes less and sometimes more. So I was just like super, super, super confused. And my doula told me, she was like, you're probably having prodromal labor again. And I was like, oh my gosh, no, this cannot be. It cannot be, because I'm not going to be able to like, you know, withstand this for much longer, because it had been, I guess, like 15 hours or so at that point. So it was getting like, I was kind of like tired and I hadn't slept at all. This was like around 4 a.m. So then my doula, once again, she suggested I reached out to the midwives and asked them if I could have a cervical check. She was like, you know, that's going to give you an idea of, is this actual labor or is this prodromal labor? And I was like, okay. So then I texted my midwife. I didn't want to call them because I didn't want to like, you know, bother them at 4 a.m. So I texted them and I was like, can I go to your office? Even though I don't know why I suggested that, because it would have been horrible to just like get in my car and drive to their to their office. And I was like, can I go to your office, you know, in the morning so that I can get a cervical check? And they replied and they were like, yeah, sure, you can come to our office, like see you there at 8 a.m. And at this point it was like 4:30 a.m. And I think it was like at like 7 a.m. I was like, I just don't think I can do this for like one more hour. So I texted them again and I was like, can I go to your office now? Like the pain is like pretty intense. Can I go now? And then one of them replied and she was like, actually, we can go to your house. Like we can go to your home and we can check you there. Like, are you okay with that? And I was like, yes, yes. So then they ended up coming at 8 a.m. and they checked me and she was like, you're 6 centimeters dilated. I was like, oh my gosh, thank you. I was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, yes. Like I knew this could not be prodromal labor for so long. Yeah. She was like, you're 6 centimeters dilated. And I was also like leaking some amniotic fluid. So she was like, you know, things are about to get more intense now. And she offered like some pain medication. Like, I don't remember what it was, but she was like, this is the pain medication that I can give you. And she was like, yes, it's going to reduce the pain, but it's also probably going to slow down things. Like, are you okay with that? And I was like, no, like, don't give me anything. Like, I just want to get this over with, you know? And I knew sort of like understanding, I feel like the first part of labor was like very confusing. I was like, are these contractions? Are these not? Am I dilating? Right. Am I not? But sort of like understanding physiological birth, like I knew very well that after 6 centimeters, things are about to get really intense, but they're also going to be faster, ideally. And I guess I sort of like trusted that. I was like, things are about to get more intense. I know that for sure. And ideally, they're going to get faster. So, you know, I think I can keep doing this for a few more hours. So no pain medication. Thank you. And she was like, okay, I'm going to check in again with you at like 11 a.m. So it was like 8 a.m. at this point. And she was like, if anything happens, just let me know. So she left. And I think as soon as she left, like things got really intense. Like I lost my mucus plug and then I had bloody show. And, you know, I continued to sort of like labor peacefully at home. I was just like in my room quietly. My mom and my dad were here because they live out of town. And I asked them to like, please come to, you know, to support me and to help with my son, my toddler. So they were here, but they were like in the living room. So it was only like Giovanni and I in the room. And I sort of like continuing to ride the wave, you know, that was kind of like my main coping mechanism. Because I was like, okay, a contraction is about to happen. And then I would just like count. And Giovanni helped me with like back pressure. And sort of like the next few hours are kind of a blur again. Like, I think I was just like so focused on coping with like with the pain. I was just like counting over and over and over, like used a comb for a little bit, but just sort of like counting and, you know, like again, like riding the wave is kind of like what helped me the most. Mm-hmm. At some point, my doula and her student showed up. Oh. I think like Giovanni like texted them. I don't know.
Like, come, 411, come.
Yes. So they came in and they helped me. Like they did some massage and like back, help with like back pressure as well. And that made a huge difference. I got into the shower at some point, huge relief to get like some hot water on my belly. Like that really helped. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also, at some point, like I had two midwives and one student midwife. At some point, like they showed up as well and they started like setting up the birth pool. And then at some point, like I noticed that my contractions were not as back to back as they were, I guess, like a few minutes before. And once again, like understanding physiological birth, I was like, okay. Like, I'm getting close. Uh-huh. I'm getting close. Like, I know my contractions are not back to back anymore. So I know I'm getting close to being done. And my midwife, I had asked some questions to her before. And I was like, how do you know? Like, I don't want constant cervical checks. So like, how are you going to know that I'm about to like, you know, be Your done? Birth. And I remember that, you know, she told me like, oh, we know. Like, we are trained to like, listen to, you know, to the birthing person, and like we can tell when they're getting close. So I guess they could tell. And around that time, she was like, okay, I think it's time for you to like jump into the pool. And I think this was like around 11:30 or something. And I was on my knees, and my arms were in my bed. That's sort of like the position that I felt most comfortable laboring in.
Mm-hmm.
So when I stand up, I felt like something coming out. And I was like, oh my gosh, something's coming out. And I went into the pool, and within a few minutes, I started to feel like very strong contractions in my whole abdomen, finally, because, mm-hmm. you know, up to this point, it was like the contractions were like only on my lower belly. And, you know, like my body started to push. And after two pushes, the head of my baby came out. And on the third push, all of him came out. I don't know how long that took. It sort of like felt like forever to me, but they told me it was like pretty quick. So I don't know, like maybe 15 minutes. Like I have no idea. It's like really funny how you sort of like lose sense of time.
Mm-hmm.
During that time. And there were so many people in the room at that point. It was like the two midwives, the student midwife, the doula, the student doula, my mom and Giovanni. But it was pretty interesting because like the ambience was so quiet. Like everyone was really quiet the whole time. It was like really, really peaceful. And then when baby came out, everyone was like, you know, and like clapping and so on. My dad was outside the room and he was like, it was so quiet. I was getting worried. And then all of a sudden, like I could hear just like excitement and clapping, and I was able to catch him, and mm-hmm. we did like immediate skin to skin. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my gosh, I couldn't believe it. I got a shot of Pitocin and then birthed the placenta within a few minutes. My midwives tucked me into my bed. My baby was still attached to the placenta. And then my doula brought me a donut. Giovanni got me coffee. My mom brought me a sandwich.
My gosh, I love it.
It was like, yes, it was like one of the best meals I've had in my life. I was just like so happy and so excited. I had a very small tear, so I didn't need any stitches or anything. And the recovery was like so easy. So like nothing compared to recovering from a cesarean in my experience. Yeah, after a long induction. And then it was really nice too, because the next few days and weeks, like my midwives visited me at home. So like all of the, like the checkups and everything were at home. So that was pretty wonderful. And I guess like throughout this whole process, once again, like understanding, you know, it was really interesting to me just how, I don't want to call it a project, but I guess it was kind of like a project to me, kind of like an experiment, like the things that we do in the lab, you know, you look for like background information, and then you sort of like prepare everything. you inform yourself with like data and what other people have found, and you look at statistics. So it was like really interesting to me how this sort of like VBAC journey like really helped me grow as a scientist, you know. So that was kind of like one of the nice outcomes. And something that I forgot to say is that after my cesarean and when I did the birth story processing, because you give a bunch of information to the person who is doing the processing for you. And one of the things that I couldn't like point out was why was I so bothered with the experience? Mm-hmm. If like everything had gone well, you know, like what was it that was bothering me? And she was kind of like the one that brought it up. She was like, because one of the things that I sort of like kept bringing up was like, I do research for a living. This is what I do. Like, this is what I do every day. I research, I look at data, I look at stats, I read the literature. This is what I do. Like, why didn't I do any research for, you know, my first pregnancy? Why didn't I prepare myself? Why didn't I second guess what the medical doctors were suggesting me to do? You know, why, mm-hmm. if I'm always like second guessing what everyone says, especially in science, like you're always like, wait a minute, where is the evidence? Can I see the data? Like, why didn't I do that? So it was really interesting to me that she brought this up. She was like, so it seems like you feel like you failed as a scientist with your first, like with your first birth experience. It seems like you feel like you failed as a scientist. And I was like, yes. Like, that is exactly how I feel. Yeah, I feel like I failed as a scientist. Why I didn't put any work in researching one of the most important events of my life. Why didn't I do that? So I think a way to sort of like cope with that in my second pregnancy was sort of like doing kind of like the opposite, like really doing all the research, looking at all the data, at all the stats. And at some point I was like, I've done all the work. So whatever the outcome is, it's not on me, you know, exactly. It's out of my hands. Exactly. So that's kind of like something that like really helped me throughout my pregnancy and throughout labor. And I'm happy that, you know, I had the outcome that I wanted. But I think at some point, especially in the last weeks of my pregnancy, I was like, whatever the outcome is, I'm at peace with it because I've done all I can to, you know, prepare and that's it.
Yeah, that's such a great message to share because in the end, just like you said, I actually love how you said it. Like, I prepare, I gather, I do the experiment. And not that birth is an experiment, like not that we're saying birth is an experiment, but like in the science lab, right? And then and then the outcome is really unknown. It's really unknown. And sometimes you can control it by adding whatever into it. And sometimes you can't, like in the kind of, is kind of like labor. Sometimes we go to the hospital and we can control it with Pitocin or an epidural or whatever. And sometimes we still have these outcomes. So such a great message. And, you know, just in the end, like it's so hard for the not average scientist, you know, the average person, then, not the scientist, to really decode all of the literature out there. So do you have any tips for the listeners on how they can go about taking the preparation like what you did? You know, and obviously we have blogs and our VBAC course and all the things to help break it down and turn these things into English because sometimes they're very hard to understand.
Don't get me started.
But what suggestions would you give to any of the listeners?
Yeah, so I have a few. Yes, the scientific literature, it's like, you know, I feel so annoyed having to write the findings of my experiments in that type of language, but I guess that is sort of like how things are done. So one of the things that I recommend people doing, one of them, I think it's not one that a lot of people think of it, but you can reach out to the authors of the paper. So I get so excited when someone, you know, reaches out to me and they're like, I saw this paper. Can you explain to me what it means? Like most scientists are just going to be so excited to just like have people reach out to them and tell them can you help me understand this? Like, most of them are going to be so excited about that. So that's one thing that you can do if you feel like reaching out to someone. Maybe sometimes they're not going to reply, but I would say like most scientists are going to be, exactly, it's definitely worth a shot. And most scientists are going to be so excited that, you know, that you're reaching out to them. The other one is that most papers come with like a short summary at the beginning. It's usually called like summary or abstract. And in that summary, they summarize kind of like the findings in a way that it's way easier to understand than if you look at the results in the discussion. Because sometimes also like the plots are impossible to understand. The statistics are very difficult to understand if you like if you are not trained in statistics. So reading the abstract and the summary, especially towards the end, there's usually like one to three sentences with the main sort of like outcome of the experiment. They're not gonna give you statistics or anything, but they're gonna tell you kind of like what they found. You will see that like most scientists are like really conservative on what they conclude from their study. Like even if their data and their stats they're really strong, they're usually very conservative on the way that they conclude. And then sometimes that conclusion like gets lost somewhere when the information is given to you by like your OBGYN, for example. So I would really encourage, you know, folks to like look at those last few sentences to like really understand, okay, my OBGYN like brought up this scientific article. Let me go and see what it's actually written there, like what they're actually saying. And just like reading those 1 to 3 sentences, you're going to get like a better understanding of like what the scientist actually found
about that study. And so,
yes.
Overall VBAC, when you found, what was the overall finding? I mean, obviously, I kind of know a lot of the overall finding, but what was the overall finding that you found in your own research when it comes to VBAC and the safety of it?
Yeah, I just found like the data is so strong in showing that VBAC is like super safe for non-high risk individuals. And like, again, like having a previous cesarean, like it's not like that does not automatically makes you high risk. And I guess if you think about it, like I was quote unquote high risk because I had a previous cesarean, like I'm advanced maternal age. And I also have like a higher than average BMI. So I had like 3 high risk factors, if you will. And like still with those factors counted in, like I knew that like VBAC was really safe for me, just like based on the data that I found. And then if you add into like reduction of like interventions, like that makes like the chances of VBAC like really high. Yeah.
And then VBAC, I know that there's rupture risk lower.
Yeah, exactly. Rupture risk. Exactly. And you know, if you like keep adding things, you know, I found like some, especially like when researching for like home birth, like the data, it's like really messy out there. Like it's not disaggregated. And by this, I mean that when they show you the statistics for like home birth, they show you the statistics of everything together. Like people who had like unplanned home births, for example, like the outcome of that can be very different of a planned home birth. And then they also add people who end up having spontaneous abortions at home, and that's included as a home birth. Like that is ridiculous. So we really need disaggregated data. So sometimes when you go into the scientific literature, you can get the disaggregated data in the scientific paper, which once again, I know that that is not in an available format for people who don't have the training. But again, you can reach out to like to the authors of the paper, to the scientists, for them to explain to you what is the actual finding, or read the abstract so that you can see, like most of those papers, you know, are like, we need more research on planned home births, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, such great information. And I know we have like so little time, but I have one more random question.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of these articles, they will say confidence level, blah, blah, blah. Right. Yeah. So can you describe a confident, like what that means as someone who is reading that? What does that mean when an author says that?
When an author says that, they mean, so they're sort of like taking percentages as their confidence level. So when they say 95% confidence, is that they mean that out of, say, 100 individuals, the chances of this occurring is less than 5% when there's like a 95% confidence interval. So once again, it means, it could mean, depending on the type of data, that out of 100 people, 95 people, like we know for sure, backed up by statistics, we know for sure that like 95% out of 100 individuals are going to have this outcome. So that's right. Basically it. They're sort of like just giving you a percentage so that it is a little bit like easier to understand. And we also use this same thing with p-values. Like p-values are something that you see all the time in the scientific literature. It's the exact same thing. So we consider p-values smaller than 0.05 as significant. So essentially this means that there is less than 5% chances that whatever you're studying is happening out of chance. So essentially it's telling you the data, you know, there's like 95% chances that what you're seeing, it's actually happening and it's not something that it's happening out of chance, if that makes sense.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we could probably talk about this for a long time, but I will not keep you any longer. I appreciate you so much. Congratulations on your birth. Thank you so much for sharing with us and have a wonderful day.
Thank you for inviting me.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.